Should Canada ban the purchase of military arms from the same country that threatens to make us the 51st state? Is it now time for Canada to escape NATO now that it is largely led by the imperialist United States? How is the Canadian northern deepwater port of Nanisivik actually now run to the advantage not of Canada, but of the United States? What are the top foreign policy questions facing the nation in the week before the next Canadian federal election? This week on the Global Research News Hour, we continue our discussion with the federal candidates competing against each other to become the next representative of Winnipeg Centre in the April 28th election. We also hear from Michelle Chosadovsky, head of the Center for Research on Globalization, about the single question of how the U.S. Northern Command has already fundamentally extinguished our sovereignty in critical ways. And we finally hear from author and activist Eve Engler about the major Canadian foreign policy questions not getting enough attention in mainstream media. On this week's program, Elections 2025, Part 2, on Canadian sovereignty and independent foreign policy, with politicians Chosadovsky and Engler. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of April 25th, 2025. The program is funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Michael Welch. The show seeks to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our shows are available to partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. We acknowledge that this program was produced on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, the Innu, the Ojibwe, the Dene, and the Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. We acknowledge that the vast benefits of the land, including water and hydroelectricity, comes to us officially through treaties that were broken by the settlers against Indigenous people. Our first step is to acknowledge the crimes committed against these people and setting about trying to rectify this injustice through reconciliation and reparations so that we can begin to establish a partnership of the land based on humanity and respect between peoples. Now it's time for News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. Listeners should know that some of the articles may run against common messaging about sensitive subjects and are not all endorsed by this radio station. The resolution of conflicts is essential for a well-running economy worldwide, as well as regionally and all the way down to the sovereign local national levels. Peace economics, be it in Switzerland or other countries that do not just profess neutrality but also practice it, like Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, not least China, and to some extent India, and certainly others, are benefiting from their political position. Their economic performance over the last few years, with a GDP growth from between 5% and 7%, is testimony for neutrality and peace leading to economic prosperity. The BRICS are not quite there yet, but one of their stated objectives is being neutral in world affairs. With ever more BRICS associates, a growing network of peace-loving and peace-promoting nations is emerging. That comes from the article, Economic Prosperity, Neutrality and Peace, Peter Koenig, by Peter Koenig, posted April 23rd. Sugar-sweetened beverages are linked to 338,240 deaths annually and contributed to 2.2 million new type 2 diabetes cases in 2020, representing about 1 in 10 cases globally. Sugary drinks cost the world 12.5 million healthy years of life in 2020, and are associated with 1.2 million new cardiovascular disease cases, or about 1 in 30 cases. Latin America, the Caribbean, and sub-Saharan Africa face the highest health impacts, with some countries attributing nearly half of new diabetes cases to sugary drinks. Processed fructose, especially high fructose corn syrup in sweetened beverages, overwhelms your liver, promotes fat storage, and contributes to insulin resistance and fatty liver disease. Unlike natural sugars in whole fruits, added fructose in drinks lacks fiber and nutrients, delivering a concentrated sugar load that disrupts metabolism and drives chronic disease. That comes from the article, Sugary Drinks Linked to More Than 330,000 Deaths a Year, by Dr. Joseph Mercola, posted April 23rd, originally published on the Mercola website. Israel can continue killing with impunity, and their defense to the International Court of Justice is not required until the 28th of January 2026. There has been very little news of this decision. The ICJ did not issue a press release, despite the fact this is their most sensational case. Accordingly, the decision has not been reported in the NY Times, Washington Post, or London Guardian. Meanwhile, Israeli media reported, quote, exclusive, Israel secures 6-month delay in Hague court proceedings, unquote. That comes from the article, Israel Stalls and the International Court of Justice Complies, by Rick Sterling, posted April 23rd. The goal is to isolate China economically, as explicitly articulated by Besant and Luttig. This is essentially what the West did to Russia after the Ukraine war broke out, but Trump is ready to push the schedule ahead on China in the absence of a more credible pretext. Trump may think he is playing 3D chess, but his plan has not been well thought out, which is obvious now that China has refused to back down. After stocks, bonds, and the dollar went into free fall, he panicked and rolled back part of his program, which is a clear sign of poor preparation and faulty assumptions. Of course, he didn't hesitate to help his family and friends profit from the market turmoil through insider trading, similar to the way Hunter Biden used his father's influence for self-enrichment. That is an excerpt from Mike Whitney and Hua Bin under the headline, China's Tariff Smackdown, interview with Hua Bin, by Hua Bin and Mike Whitney, posted April 23rd, originally published on the UNS Review. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. We continue now with our conversations with the remaining candidates to represent Winnipeg Centre in the 2025 election.
Okay, well, first I'd like to say thank you for the invite for the interview and having me at the lovely studios here at CKUW. My name is Deborah Wall, and I am the candidate for the Animal Protection Party of Canada running in Winnipeg Centre. The party was established in 2005, and its founding mission was to be a voice for our animal cousins and the environment and bring their concerns forward specifically during elections, but also, you know, between elections. I had been a member of the party since its inception, but never thought that I would have the time or the energy to run a campaign. And then I heard about this paper candidate business, and I thought, well, I can do that. So in 2021, I decided to try and got my name on the ballot and represented the party again in Winnipeg Center. I was one of seven candidates that time. Now it appears there's six candidates running, so I'm getting closer to the top just by default. but what, even as a paper candidate, that opens up a lot of opportunities for advocacy that I didn't previously have. And for example, one of the high schools in my riding had invited all candidates to bring down their lawn signs, and you know you've made it when your name is on a lawn sign, to bring their lawn signs down to the school and have their students research the parties. So that would have made them aware of the issues that we're trying to bring forward during the election.
Okay, well, welcome aboard, Deborah.
Thank you.
So we're going to look at the realm of Trump and how that's very much affecting our election. So first, I'd like to ask, considering he's being directing a lot of Trump's tariffs to our country and actually making threats of annexation of the country, I'm wondering, could you explain whether or not Canada should halt all purchase of military hardware, including the F-35 fighter jets, the refueling jets, the air surveillance aircraft, the naval destroyers, and drones?
Well, I want to start off by saying I realize this is a family show, so I'll try not to say what I really think of the person that's currently occupying the office of the president in the United States. I'm not that familiar, so I don't want to speak, as if I'm knowledgeable about that. But, I mean, we have to think about these weapons of war and what they mean. You know, they're causing, not only their intent is to cause mass destruction, but there's also mass destruction in their production. You know, we only have so many resources on this planet. It's a finite planet, but we use it as if it's got an endless number of resources, and it doesn't. And we also have to share those with the other species that live here. So every time these weapons of war are being produced, we're tearing up the earth. We're tearing up our home.
Mm. Now, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is also largely led by the United States. They're by far the biggest player in the alliance. And, with this constant threat by threats of Trump and the ways in which they seem to be deviating from other countries, could you explain why we continue to not only pay more for a minimum of 5%, but to even be a part of NATO, when, especially after they've had wars, led us in wars in Afghanistan, in Libya, and in Yugoslavia?
Again, you're asking me a question that's out of my range of knowledge, so I don't want to be a politician and, pretend that I know what I'm talking about when I don't. But you had mentioned the annexation of Canada. And to me, the whole idea of countries really is sort of lines made up by white men. But I will take up arms before I concede a millimeter of Canadian soil to the United States.
Okay. The U.S. Northern Command, which Canada entered into almost 20 years ago, that actually extended NORAD into the area, not just air and space, but land and sea, and civil forces as well, giving the commander in the United States the ability to move throughout the country. And I'm wondering, given that, I mean, how can we maintain an independent foreign policy of the United States while still being under this U.S. Northern Command?
I can only speak in generalities about foreign policy on the Animal Protection Party of Canada's platform, but generally, the idea is that any sort of foreign policy has to be based on establishing human rights and the rights of animals and the protection of the environment.
Okay. Now, the UN has used the term of apartheid to describe the situation in Israel and their poor treatment of Palestinians. And that given the ways in which the current government, I guess under Prime Minister Carney, is not going to censure or punish or isolate the state of Israel, even though a ruling came out from the International Court of Justice calling the idea that there is the case of a genocide by Israel is a plausible one. How would you argue that Canada should react to that kind of decision? Should we be doing more to prevent a genocide in Gaza?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it's a genocide, and we should at least not be contributing to it. If we're not going to do more, we should at least not be contributing to it.
Okay. Do you have any other points you'd like to raise with regard to your party and the questions I've asked so far?
Again, I'm not an expert in this particular field, so I don't really have anything to add about that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Deborah, it's been a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for being my guest.
I would like to talk about the tariffs, though.
Okay.
Because
okay,
you had
go ahead.
Mentioned tariffs
okay.
Initially, and I think it could be very interesting. You know, now that we are sort of reconsidering trading partners, this might also be a time to reconsider how we produce things in this country. Most people are, you know, when you talk about the climate catastrophe, everybody's pretty much on board with fossil fuels. They understand its impacts and whatnot, but very few people are addressing the cow in the room, which is animal agriculture. And it is one of the most damaging industries on the planet. It, you know, besides the suffering on a monstrous scale that it causes to animals, it is responsible for producing more greenhouse gases than all forms of transportation combined. It's causing environmental degradation, habitat and species loss, freshwater waste and pollution, ocean acidification, and dead zones. It's actually creating microbe-resistant or antibiotic resistant microbes. It checks off all of the boxes that for conditions that could likely lead to the next pandemic, and it has negative human health implications. So what we need to do is operationalize the Canada Food Guide and the billions of dollars to this destructive industry, the subsidies, and help farmers to transition to sustainable, efficient and healthy plant-based food system. This could be our opportunity. And I'm also kind of interested what's going on in the States with the whole Doge department where they're looking for cuts. Now there's been some cuts to the National Institutes of Health, which could be a good thing because there are a lot of wasteful animal experimentation that's being done there. So, you know, we wouldn't drive a car where the brakes work only 5% of the time, and nor would we buy a cell phone that drops 95% of the calls. So it makes no sense that we continue to fund animal research that has the same rate of failure when results are applied to humans. So this would be a good time for them and us to transition to humane, cost-effective, and human-relevant research. And I just want to make note that the Canadian Centre for Alternatives to Animal Methods, which is working on these non-human methods, is now in a storage bin due to lack of government funding. And that should also be an election issue if we're concerned about our health, that we should be supporting these types of initiatives.
Okay. Deborah, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Raoul Walia. I'm with the Liberal Party of Canada, and I believe that people should be voting for me and the Liberals this year because we're at a crossroads in Canada. We have a choice to be strong or weak. And with the forces against us from President Trump, we need to stand united and strong together. And that comes through the Liberal Party.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, President Trump is, leveling tariffs against us already and is even threatened to annex our country, right? So one of the things, questions that people have is purchasing of military arms from the United States, the F-35s, not to mention drones, air surveillance craft, refueling jets, naval destroyers, that maybe we should hold off on purchasing these military arms from the United States, as long as Trump and his policies are in play. What is your stance on that, and could you explain it for our audience?
Yeah, I think the Liberal Party very much agrees that we need to diversify and, sort of look at other trading partners and partners so we can secure our national defense systems and strategies. For example, when Prime Minister Carney announced that he'll be reviewing the purchase order for F-35s, as well as we're looking at Gripens potentially, the Swedish-made jets, but also you look at our new aerial defense system that was purchased from Australia, around $4.2 billion. That's an investment that's significant, and that's key concrete ways that we're looking at other partners when you talk about shipbuilding as well. Part of Mark Carney's new national plan for reinvigorating and revamping our military is to also, build ships at home. We have, a lot of local manufacturers like Davy Shipbuilding that would be able to take on such a daunting and tall task. And, it helps our defense, but our economy as well. We'll be giving many more jobs to Canadians. It's high-skilled jobs at that. The economy will flourish because we're doing it in-house, but also looking at ethical partners and seeing new technologies potentially not seen in Canadian history for their armed forces.
Well, Canada is under attack from the Trump administration, and the United States is basically the lead player of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And again, because of this alignment, maybe we should think about getting out of NATO, because, after all, NATO has actually, in recent years, saw attacks on Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, and Libya, and actually destroyed those countries. So would you favor getting out of NATO and maybe possibly finding a new organization, or how would you, or should we just stay in NATO and try to negotiate, some other role in it?
Look, I think Mark Carney has been very clear on what he thinks and what the vision is for Canada. He wants us to be a leader on the international stage, and we've committed to reaching that 2% NATO spend mark from our GDP, and that's super important. And NATO, it's an organization that protects Canada. It's an organization that has a lot of significance, and we can be leaders within the organization, and it stands for a lot. It is a security alliance and partnership, but also a way for our troops to gain experience on the ground in Lithuania or Latvia, for example. When you talk about having a secure border, what does that mean exactly? And I think that comes from the peace of mind that you have with having so many countries rallying behind you. And we're meeting our mark there too with the 2% spend that has been committed.
There was the United States had created a new body. It's called the U.S. Northern Command, and Canada entered into that in 2006. And this essentially has put, reconfigured NORAD so that that the jurisdiction is not only air and space, but also the land and the sea. And a lot of people have argued that this could actually contort our ability to have an independent foreign policy as long as the United States, their lead general, can send their troops into the territory whenever they want without the explicit command of Canada. So in order to attain this independent foreign policy, should we get out of NORAD altogether, or how could we express our independent foreign policy in a way that's not going to interrupt the NORAD?
Look, NORAD is still a very important safety defense mechanism for both partners, and I still genuinely believe that there is a path forward where we can work in collaboration, but at the same time, Canada needs to strengthen our Arctic especially, and that is the key for our defense. If we strengthen our North, then we'll be able to even combat the forces of Russia, for example.
Yeah, well, it's just that the United States would basically treating it as North American territory, right?
Right. There is that too, but I would say it's something that we'd have to revisit, and it seems that they're not coming at us with hostility in terms of militarily. This is purely economics for the moment, and everything should be done on that case-by-case basis, and it looks like Mark Carney's doing the right things and taking the right steps as appropriate.
Okay. Finally, I want to talk about Israel in the sense that the United Nations had declared that Israel is a genocide, an apartheid regime, given its treatment of Palestinians. And I'm just wondering, given that the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have declared their current treatment of Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza as a genocide, and even the International Court of Justice has pointed to things and saying that the case of genocide by Israel is a plausible one. So I'm wondering, because Prime Minister Carney and Prime Minister Trudeau before him did not punish or censure or isolate the Israeli state in any way, and I'm wondering how you would, what can the can your government or any government do to stop what appears to be a genocide happening right now?
Look, Canada are the founders of peacekeepers. We have remained steadfast in our approach to humanitarian efforts and needs and have been a global leader in that, whether it be in Sudan, in Yemen, in Syria, in Afghanistan as well, when we bring the refugees to Canada. So I would say that we are getting a little too ahead of ourselves. Right now, we have to focus on the humanitarian crisis that's happening right now. We need to bring humanitarian aid back into Gaza and the West Bank. We need to ask, and that is one of the biggest concerns right now, because women and children are dying. And we need to make sure that at least we have all the wraparound supports needed to either get them out or to provide safety for them. And that should be the priority. The priority are the women and children that are disproportionately affected by this.
No arms embargo, though?
We have an arms embargo with Israel.
Not really. I mean, I don't know if you heard the news, but there was Project Plowshares had imposed or had published an article talking about how U.S. military, or how the General Dynamics Ordnance and Tactical System Canada had sold artillery, artillery propellant to the United States, to the IDF, so it's not a complete embargo.
That's definitely regrettable then, and unfortunately I'm not an elected member and I haven't been, so you know, this is something I can definitely review and discuss if and when elected.
Okay. Why don't you tell me, just as a final point, like what the Liberal Party does have to offer to this situation that maybe you haven't yet covered in anything you've had to say. What would bring you to get the Liberals on the subject of the military sovereignty and so on?
I think we're meeting the mark and doing robust enhancements to our military not seen in many decades. I can tell you from a personal experience, my partner is a naval warfare officer for the Canadian Navy, and just the process of having her go through it, I've seen was very cumbersome, but also at a point where, you know, active service members probably don't feel valued as much, given their pay levels. And that was one thing that I had heard from her personally. And you know, a Mark Carney and a Liberal-led government is going to increase the wages for our active troops, and that's going to help out a ton in terms of recruitment. I think if we invest in our people, then we're obviously investing in our military, and our greatest strength as Canadians and as being Canada are our people.
The only remaining candidate in the Winnipeg Centre riding was Tom Bambrick, who was to run for the Conservative Party. After numerous attempts to reach out to him, the Conservative candidate declined my interview request. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcasting from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and from partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. One of the questions I asked the political candidates was on the topic of Canada's entry into U.S. Northern Command, or U.S. NORTHCOM. U.S. NORTHCOM was announced by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld way back in April of 2002. It declared that the U.S. had the right to declare air as well as naval and land jurisdiction, not only over America, but over Canada, Mexico, parts of the Caribbean, and the North Pole. With all the talk by Trump about making Canada the 51st state, the comment that America's jurisdiction may actually be a reality. We're going to focus on this question with our next guest, who has done extensive research into what's in NORTHCOM and what's been stated in the media about it. Michelle Chosadovsky is an award-winning author, professor of economics emeritus at the University of Ottawa, founder and director of the Center for Research on Globalization in Montreal, editor of Global Research, which funds this program. Thanks, Professor Chosadovsky, for returning to the program.
Delighted to be on the program. It's a very, very important issue because the elections are on April 25th of this month. And people have to, across the land, across Canada, have to know what this issue implies with regard to our sovereignty.
I mentioned that Donald Rumsfeld had announced it in April of 2002. The prime minister at the time was Jean Chrétien. And apparently he was not into this new arrangement. I mean, can you comment about that?
Well, the thing is that Jean Chrétien actually resigned. And it was, there were two elements. One was the fact that this statement was done unilaterally without any prior discussions in the House of Commons. Or even the presence of Canadian journalists at the press conference, which he gave. Now, he says, I'm paraphrasing here, the creation of the 51st state is what we would call déjà vu in French. It was announced by Donald Rumsfeld in 2002, and he gave all the features of this process. It's the territorial jurisdiction by land, by sea, by air, extending from the Caribbean basin up to the Canadian Arctic territories and the North Pole, contiguous to, and this is very important, contiguous to Greenland. And it would seem that nobody in Canada knows about this. Our country is a military zone. It's under U.S. Northern Command, and it is part of a whole set of regional U.S. Command structures for which ultimately, well, they say it's the defense of the United States of America. I don't think it's the defense of the United States of America or of Canada. It is essentially based on geopolitical confrontations with the Russian Federation and so on and so forth, and including the fact that they already have conducted simulations of a World War III scenario. This was declassified and dates back, I think, to 2007. So that is the background. Canadians don't know about it. I wrote about this right from the beginning. I was in touch with the Toronto Star at the time, and they said to me, yes, we'll publish it. I sent it to them, a very summarized perspective, and on three occasions they confirmed that they were going to publish it, but they never did.
Okay, can I just stop you just for a second? I was wondering, I mean, under NORAD, that's portrayed as, you know, a partnership between Canada and the United States. And as I read this Northern Command, it says that, yeah, United States can deploy troops onto Canadian territory without informing the Canadian jurisdiction. But I mean, is there not reciprocity in NORTHCOM? I mean, under the agreement, as I understand it, does not Canada also have an arrangement to deploy Canadian troops onto American soil without informing the U.S. government?
No, they absolutely don't. That doesn't exist. No, there's no. To my understanding, there's some kind of agreement pertaining to the St. Lawrence Valley, where they have a partnership in the border. But I mean, what's also very disturbing, that this is a violation of the United Nations International Law of the Sea. Because it extends U.S. military jurisdiction into the high seas. We're talking about 500 miles of territorial and international waters, and that is verifiable, and it's part of it. Donald Rumsfeld says it very clearly. We are extending U.S. military power by land, waterways, air, and it encompasses, I should mention that the project encompasses Mexico as well, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's Mexico, the United States, and Canada, from the Caribbean up to the North Pole. Now, in Mexico, well, I should mention that this, that Jean Chrétien, first of all, did not support the US-UK, should I say, invasion of Iraq, which was based on false premises and on lies and fabrications and on crimes against humanity. And he had the honesty to say that no, he didn't want, Canada did not participate in that war. Okay. Mm. And he also says, and that was in his letter, his open letter to Donald, okay, which was called from one old guy to another. It was respectful, but what he said very clearly, we want to protect the Arctic, but the United States refuses to recognize the Northwest Passage. Now, the Northwest Passage, of course, is strategic, but the United States says it belongs to us. We have, they have a military base on the Northwest Passage. Nobody knows about this. Why is the Canadian public opinion not informed of what's going on?
Are you talking about the Nanisivik Naval Facility there, a deep water port at on the northern tip of Baffin Island?
There's a record of military facilities already in the Northwest Passage. I would have to check on that issue, but there is one. What is I think disturbing is that you have here. What I should mention is that while Jean Chrétien refused to go along with it, and he resigned. The dossier was then handed over to his successor, who was Paul Martin. And now Paul Martin negotiated with the U.S. administration and ultimately came to an acceptance. There really is no joint military undertaking between Canada and the United States. It's token. Mm-hmm. And the military base which is responsible for NORTHCOM is in US territory. I should of course mention this is a military the status of these U.S. command structures pertains to the U.S. regional commands in six regions of the world. You have U.S. European Command, you have U.S. Africa Command, you have U.S. Central Command, which is the Middle East, then you have U.S. Pacific Command, and then more recently, You had U.S. Northern Command, and then you have U.S. Southern Command, which is South America. It's the Caribbean and South America. Now, in other words, our country has been transformed into a command structure of the Pentagon. I can't put it any other way.
I noticed that. Well, getting back to the Nana Civic Naval Facility, I mean, it's been in the works since 2007, till right after we signed or we entered NORTHCOM, and it's been experiencing numerous delays. But the Canadian government site explains that it is going ahead in 2025, this year, and it seems, according to the literature I've read, that it is a wholly Canadian base declared dedicated to protecting Arctic sovereignty. Can you explain how you detailed that NORTHCOM is involved in this project?
Well, I'm not familiar with the with the recent developments. I mean, there's the Nana Civic Naval Facility at Resolute Bay. Yes, you're absolutely right. That was in 2007. Now, we don't really have. We should. This, of course, I would say that this should be the object of parliamentary debate. And that it should also be the object of statements on the part of the Canadian government as it stands in relation to Trump's well, the Trump statement in regards to the 51st state is somewhat obsolete because we've gone way past that. Our country is a military area of the United States of America, and without adequate consultations. But yes, there was an agreement which was reached. I believe it was in 2006, 2007, 2007, and that was. Under the auspices of I believe it was Paul Martin, who was instrumental in these negotiations.
You spoke earlier about how the northern base was used as a part of a strategy for, they've already developed instruments like the nuclear war scenarios, right? And I mean, I know that maybe it's just a coincidence that Canada and the United States have the same concerns about Russian and Chinese trade ships in the Arctic, and as it is not a coincidence that Canada and the United States have the same policies with regard to foreign policy generally. I don't know. I mean, maybe you could just lay out exactly what
Well,
those nuclear war facilities were doing.
I think there are two related answers to that. First of all, Canada's a member of NATO, and NATO has almost the same perspective with regard to Russia and the Ukraine war and so on as the United States, and in fact, we know that. The allies well, the 32 member states of NATO, and if I'm think correctly, and related partners, there is a narrative and there's a consensus that Russia is the enemy. Now, I mean, there are people across the land that don't believe. Actually, that is the case, and there's another area of well, we're diverting from what from the issue of the Northwest of the Northwest Passage, et cetera, but I mean there's one thing which of course is important in Canada is that the Ukrainian government is dominated by Nazi elements. And we have a stance against neo-Nazism, and so do our allies in Western Europe. But Systematically, they are supporting a Nazi government. I can't say anything else. And that is also something which is forbidden as far as coverage in the Western media.
So what do you think of when in terms of reversing the course and asserting an independent foreign policy, what would we need to do? I mean, would we have to get out of NORTHCOM or NORAD if that's even possible? Or are we now like Puerto Rico, say, a protectorate where we make sovereign decisions only in terms of domestic policy, but our foreign policy is taken over, trumped, if you will, by the United States?
Well, our foreign policy, we are reflecting the foreign policy of Washington, and I think that is a big mistake. In as much as there's sovereignty, national sovereignty in Canada, that should be an object of discussion and debate. Do we support the United States in every action that it does in all the wars and the killings and in well, we can quote many. Afghanistan, it's reduced to a impoverished country, destroyed ultimately. Do we take the same position with regard to Palestine and Iran and the Middle East of the crimes which are committed against the people of Palestine, the targeting of Iran? No, we don't. Canadian public opinion is supportive of peace, and we should be at the forefront. There was a period, and I recall there was a period where Canada was an instrument of peace in different parts of the world. That's not the case anymore. They are simply reflecting the US project of global warfare. It's global warfare, and it's global warfare in the sense that the high you can talk about the Monroe Doctrine now. What kind of doctrine is it that the entire continent, extending from the Arctic right to the tip of Argentina and the South Pole, is under US military command, so to speak, because there are two command structures. There's US Northern Command and there's US Southern Command. Now, that is an object also, I think, for debate in the what? The 2 weeks prior to the election. We've
Less than
hardly
2 weeks.
any time to address important issues, but that should be one of the issues to be addressed at the in the time from now until the Canadian parliamentary elections.
Professor Chostovsky, I appreciate your insights during this coming election. Hopefully, it will begin to galvanize principled and informed activism before it's too late. Thank you so much and take care.
Delighted to be on the program.
Thank you. We were joined by Professor Michel Chostodovsky, author, professor of economics at the emeritus at the University of Ottawa, founder and director of the Center for Research on Globalization. Eve Engler is an activist and author of 13 books, 11 of which are devoted to Canadian foreign policy. He's also been a frequent guest of this program. Welcome back to the Global Research NewsHour, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Eve, based on conventional news coverage, with regard to our foreign policy, Canadians are concerned about Trump, the president of the United States, his tariffs, and his economical warfare against countries around the world, including threats of annexing Canada, making us the 51st state. But there's concern about Israel's violence against the people of Palestine, but also demand to return the hostages held by Hamas. And we're presented with the unquestioned belief in raising military spending in order to defend our country and come to the aid of others victimized by authoritarian rule. I wonder if you could name, say, that the top three or possibly four stories that Canadians you believe should be focused on at this time?
Well, I think the genocide in Gaza is the most important moral foreign policy issue, and obviously specifically Canada's enabling of that. We are seeing that forced into the election. We saw that at the election, the French language election debate. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh pressed Prime Minister Mark Carney on why he won't use the word genocide to describe what Israel's doing. Carney clearly was on the back foot. So that's I think the most clear-cut kind of moral issue because Canada is so complicit. Broader issues, I think the China issue is a kind of a little bit of an interesting one in that it's the there's kind of a no one in the dominant political world wants to defend economic ties with China, and there's sort of this anti-China kind of across the board, but it's pretty clear that the liberals are less hostile to China than the conservatives or the NDP are, which I think is to their credit. Obviously, they're doing it for principally for capitalist reasons, not for any sort of kind of bigger moral reasons. So that's a an issue that I think the public unfortunately is quite unlike on Palestine, where the public I think is substantially more sympathetic to Palestinians than the dominant media. And it's actually a kind of winning issue for the NDP to hit on Palestine and to some extent some liberals. That's not the case with China. The military spending question is pretty stark because it's basically a consensus across the political spectrum that we should be pumping in huge more resources into warfare. Rather than public housing. So even the NDP, the opposition Social Democratic Party, they're calling to hit this arbitrary NATO-inspired 2% of GDP target for military spending, while Mark Carney is calling for that to be even increased. Now, there are lots of course of Canadian foreign policy issues that are just getting no attention whatsoever. So for instance, Canada's mining industry, global powerhouse that's involved in all kinds of abuses abroad, long-standing issue of Canadian foreign policy going back decades and decades. I can't, from what I can tell, it's gotten zero attention in any major media outlet. Things like Canada's role in Haiti, also another issue that's got decades of imperialistic Canadian policy in Haiti and just sort of zero attention in the dominant media, or for that matter, among the political parties.
I think another issue that has sort of come up is this, the influence of foreign, they call it foreign interference in the election system. And as far as I could tell, they mean these so-called authoritarian parties like Russia, China, and Iran. What do you think of that concept?
Well, I've argued for quite a while that the foreign interference panic in Canada did reflect foreign interference. It reflected US power within Canada and pressing Canada to become to join the US's Target China campaign. And so you can trace specific groups receiving US funding within Canada, like the Uyghur Advocacy Project, you getting US government money to push the foreign interference question, the Disinfo Watch at the McDonnell Laurier Institute also pushing the foreign interference panic and receiving US funding for that purpose. And then more broadly, if you look at the institutions that are biggest proponents of that, like CSIS and the intelligence agencies, military. They're the institutions that are most closely aligned with the US and most integrated with their US counterparts. So that's what the foreign interference brouhaha has been really about. It's mostly Target China. There was initially some of it started as a sort of anti-Russia kind of thing, but that quickly was eclipsed by the China focus. And then when India seems to have assassinated a Sikh activist in Vancouver, then India became kind of more talked about. But really, the driving issue was China. And I just did a piece about Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu's recent comments, which I think is pretty clearly part of Netanyahu trying to get Pierre Poilievre, the conservative leader, to be the next Canadian prime minister. And it's pretty flagrant form of intervention in Canada's election, and it's on top of a whole slew of different ways, which I detail in the article, of the Israeli government's interference in Canadian affairs. And there's no pushback, there's no comment even about Israeli influence in Canada, interference in Canada, which is by any serious look is far greater, certainly far greater than Iran and Russia. And I would say substantially greater than China as well. There's only one country, of course, that has greater foreign interference in Canada, which is the U.S. But Israel is just sort of ignored in the foreign interference discussion. The U.S. has, because of Trump's crass threats of annexing Canada and aggressive tariff and other attacks in recent months. There's sort of become some sort of hesitancy around U.S. power, but the Israel question is just mostly dropped completely from the dominant political discussion.
In just a minute left here, but I also wanted to mention that I mean there was a time in February when you were arrested by the police, and you said that there's this woman you were responding to anti-Palestine posts of a person on X, and you were arrested and you were put in jail. You spent 4 days late, four days before you could see a judge, and then you were in jail for that length of time, and then the police seemed to escalate the charges because you posted about it. You found these charges were alarming from the standpoint that your freedom of speech is being violated. But there's actually a partisan political dimension to this story as well, isn't there?
Well, the partisan political dimension being that Neil Oberman, the conservative candidate here in the Montreal riding, who's going against Anthony Housefather, the Liberal MP, who's Oberman's criticizing Housefather's not being Zionistic enough. He's the one who did the law support for this Zionist influencer, Dahlia Kurtz, that accused me of harassment. So it's a Conservative Party candidate that used his legal expertise, and he's been doing this. He's behind more than a dozen legal injunctions and threats targeting anti-genocide protesters or groups over the past year or so. So the Conservative Party is very much aligning with this really authoritarian Zionistic push. And you just had Poilievre on Saturday announced that he would basically copy Donald Trump and expel international students or others who didn't have full citizenship if they criticized Israel or criticized Israel's Holocaust in Gaza. So it's a pretty extreme authoritarian Zionism that's taken up much of the political sphere.
We've been speaking to Eve Engler, the author, activist, and frequent commentator on this program. His website is yvesengler.com. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, a program funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, the Innu, the Ojibwe, the Dene, and the Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The show can air on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and is available for streaming or download on the site globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, please email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Thanks once again for joining us.